Graham Talks Pat's back. So, you know, there hasn't been a ton in regards to news for the Patriots specifically over the past couple of days, admittedly. But there has been news in regards to the broader NFL. Obviously, the combine wrapping up, you know, this week. Before that, or after that now, over the next couple of weeks, we're going to see free agency really, you know, kick off, and we're going to see the bulk of that, you know, come to fruition. We're going to see a lot of these, you know, highly sought after free agents finally find a home. So I think the first thing to do, honestly, this is probably more of a me and Thad thing to do. But I do kind of want to just take a quick look at what has been going on across the NFL over the past couple of days. The most recent news is that Trey Hendrickson, the most recent news and the news that affects the Patriots the most, arguably, is Trey Hendrickson. He announced that he's, you know, kind of saying goodbye to the Bengals on Instagram. Big thank you post to the Bengals, which obviously would indicate that he is leaving. Obviously had some contract troubles last season. Recent article for the Daily Campus, I did have Trey Hendrickson as, or ESPN had Trey Hendrickson as their number one free agent, and he was my top fit for the Patriots. I think as far as free agents the Patriots should be looking at, Trey Hendrickson is number one. I also think that as far as places for Trey Hendrickson to want to end up, the Patriots are also arguably number one. I think between the money that they have to spend, you know, obviously already having a pretty established group of defensive linemen, but, you know, wanting to continue to improve that edge, I think it makes a ton of sense. And that'll be something that, you know, I continue to talk about with Thad this week. I think we're recording, today's Tuesday, I think we're recording on Friday. So we'll go a little bit more in depth on, you know, the broader, you know, free agent class there and pick some of our best fits. For some of those teams, obviously we had to take a little hiatus, you know, with us just being busy and everything. The other big piece of news, Kyler Murray, it's been implied for a little while now, but Kyler Murray officially was released by the Cardinals today. I really do think the Jets make a ton of sense for him. The Jets, speaking of, they did tag Breece Hall, which was somewhat news. I don't know who else their running back would have been unless they really wanted Isaiah Davis to, you know, step into that role. I think that taking Jeremiah Lovett too, even though I wrote about it as a possibility, I think would have been foolish on their part. Not to say that being foolish isn't something the Jets do pretty consistently, but, you know, I think that's something to keep in mind. I also think just for Kyler Murray, I've talked about it before, there's a lot of parallels to Detroit. You know, obviously Aaron Glenn coming in from Detroit. If he wants to sort of rebuild that Detroit-style team, he tagged Breece Hall, which is their sort of Jahmyr Gibbs. I would say David Montgomery, but he obviously got traded yesterday. You know, they want to rely on the running game. They took a pair of tackles high in the draft. Obviously, you know, one of them not with Glenn, but taking a right tackle at number seven, just like the Lions did with Penei Sewell, they do that with Armon Membu. You take a tight end in the second round in Laporta and Mason Taylor for the Jets out of LSU. So there is definitely some alignments there. And then also acquiring a veteran in Jared Goff, who's a former number one pick, potentially acquiring a veteran in Kyler Murray, former number one pick, and then using the draft picks that they have from, in the Lions' case, the Stafford trade and their own picks, or in the Jets' case, the the Sauce Gardner trade and the Quinnen Williams trade to continue to build around Kyler Murray or whoever that veteran might be. Less importance to New England, you know, Daniel Jones had the transition tag placed on him. Not like New England's really in the market for a QB. I don't think that it seems very likely that either the Dolphins or Jets would be going after Daniel Jones. But I think that's just news across the league for an AFC team that with Jones, obviously the Colts looked really, really good at the beginning of the year, started out 7-1 before kind of collapsing in the latter half of the year. I think they went 1-8 or 2-7 maybe. Regardless, not good though. And then the surprising piece of news, 27-year-old center, one of the better centers in football, got a massive deal last offseason to play center for the Bears. Drew Dahlman made his first Pro Bowl this year. I think his first Pro Bowl this year. Shockingly retired. If you remember, you know, there's been a couple guys like that. Ali Marpet, a couple years ago, I think was only 28 and he retired, and he was a really, really good guard. So these interior linemen, man, they're disappearing on us. So once again, that's probably more of a Thad discussion to have, potentially looking to replace him, you know, elsewhere. Jimmy Ward, released by the Texans. I think more than anything, that could potentially be a safety that the Patriots brought in, but that doesn't really necessarily mean to me that he's, you know, some long-term legit player. His age is catching up to him too. How old is he exactly? Like, he's kind of well into his 30s from what I remember. He's 34. So, like, I wouldn't mind bringing him in if, you know, something weird happens with the Jalen Hawkins deal or something, but I think realistically you're looking for a more long-term option there. Khalil Mack announced he'll be returning next year. I think that's an interesting piece of news. Marshawn Lattimore was released. Juwan Taylor released. You know, the Browns acquire Titus Howard for a late-round pick and extend him for $21 million, which is, you know, something, to say the least. But Khalil Mack coming back could be interesting. I wrote him into being part of the Chargers' plans for next year in my recent article for Daily Campus. That, to me, makes a ton of sense. I just don't think you'd want to get rid of one of the better pass rushers or let one of the better pass rushers walk when you're trying to be a competitive team. If you're LA, there's also no shortage of cap space for the Chargers. So, you know, to me, that is the sort of guy that I think the Patriots would have a lot of interest in. But, you know, I think him going back to LA would probably be a priority. I also don't think it's impossible he goes back to Chicago. You know, I think they're looking for help on the edge. And, you know, I think he's, even if he's just a situational pass rusher at this point in his career and you don't trust him to go out there and, you know, be an every down player, you know, I think that has a lot of value if you're Chicago. The one other piece is the Vikings are apparently open to trading Jonathan Greenard, according to Adam Schefter. That would be a really interesting potential addition to me. Greenard is only 28. I think he's not a guy that you look at and you say, oh, you know, you're at that Max Crosby level. Had only 3 sacks this year, but the previous 2 had 12 last year with the Vikings, or 12 in 2024 at the Vikings, and then 12.5 at the Texans before that. So he's been a little bit up and down in his career. You know, had 1 sack, then 8 sacks, then 1.5, then 12.5, then 12, then 3. So I'm not super familiar with how the Vikings did this year, or how the Vikings looked schematically this year, but he only played in 12 games. I'm not sure what type of injury he had, but that would be the sort of guy that I think New England could potentially be interested in. I'd be curious. Jonathan Greenard, let's look at the Vikings cap table. Because the report I saw doesn't actually focus in on how much he's owed. And if you look at it, it is pretty understandable that that he's going to be gone. So the Vikings already kissed Aaron Jones goodbye. He was slated to make $14 million. According to Over the Cap, the Vikings are over $46 million over the cap as things stand. Cutting Aaron Jones, I'm not sure if they designated them to be post-June 1 cuts or what the deal was. I'm curious now. Adam Schefter said they're – I'm just looking at on Instagram, but you know, just under shy of $8 million in savings by cutting Aaron Jones. So obviously, they'll need a new running back. And then the other one they released was Javon Hargrave, who was on $20 million down. They saved $10 million from the Hargrave deal. So they're still going to need to save, you know, close to $20 million or over $20 million. No, actually, sorry, my math is terrible. Almost $30 million, rather, you know, as they, you know, are looking to surround J.J. McCarthy with the best pieces possible to determine if he, you know, if he's still a guy that they can utilize. I'd imagine Justin Jefferson with the almost $39 million cap hit, restructuring him saves $18 million, so I'd imagine that's a possibility. But yeah, I mean, Blake Cashman's making $9 million. I don't understand how that's possible. He's fine, but he's not anything crazy. Like Josh Oliver making $9 million makes no sense, but they can't get out of that contract. You know, Blake Brendel, I think, had the highest pressure rate allowed in the league among centers, and you know, he's up close to 4.5. I don't think that the Vikings have any issue starting Jordan Mason at running back. I do still think they'd probably add another guy there ideally, but that could be something to look into. Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely some work to be done for the Vikings. But this is turning into Graham Talks Vikings. But Grenard's on $22 million. If he were to get traded before June 1, the Patriots would be responsible for almost $12.3 million worth. Grenard's also under contract for the following season. He'd have a $22.3 million cap hit. And then he has a void year of $3.3 million. So, yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. I'm not exactly sure what it would look like, you know, a trade involving Grenard. You know, I don't think you'd want to give up anything more than maybe a second-round pick for him, but that's something that I guess they could potentially look into. But, yeah, I mean, free agency's coming up. There's obviously a lot of moving pieces here. As, you know, the Patriots look to make another run. So, you know, I think adding a guy like Grenard, should you not be able to add a Trey Hendrickson, should you not be able to add a, you know, a Max Crosby or one of these really top-tier upper echelon guys, I think that could be a super viable option. I'll give you guys – I did this last week too – I'll give you guys another sneak peek of an article I have coming out. And in all honesty, I actually did think about kind of editing this article after the Drew Dahlman trade, or Drew Dahlman retirement, rather. But I wrote an article involving three potential trades the Patriots could make prior to free agency. And the first one involved a center in Garrett Bradbury. So I said Garrett Bradbury and pick 169, which is a fifth-round pick, for pick 124, which is a fourth-round pick. So the Patriots move up 45 slots in the draft, and doing so, give up their starting center. And I think on one hand, you might say, why would you want to give up a starting center who was pretty solid this year? Well, you save $5.7 million, and if you have any belief in Jared Wilson sliding over to center, I think, you know, moving up around is not terrible value to, you know, save a couple $1 million prior to trying to make a push in free agency. I'm increasingly starting to believe that not only will both Garrett Bradbury and Jared Wilson be on the roster next year, but I think that you might be running with the same starting five on the offensive line. I don't think that's totally impossible. I think you might just bank on Wilson and Campbell improving in year two and move on from there. You know, apparently they haven't had any conversations with Jared Wilson about moving to center, but I'm not sure that would be something that would be reported necessarily. I also do kind of feel that Garrett Bradbury probably, his fate would probably be more known at this point if, you know, Wilson were to move to center. I do kind of feel that, you know, he probably would have been released at this point. They already released Antonio Gibson. That, to me, was the only real, like, cap casualty they had. Saved about $3 million. We talked about that last time. For Jacksonville, I think in theory the trade makes sense. Robert Hainsey, Patrick McCarry both have experience starting at center. McCarry, actually, I'm not sure if McCarry has experience starting at center in the NFL, but came out of college as a center prospect. Robert Hainsey, a little bit expensive for the player he is, I think. And then McCarry, I think, is another guy that could be a potential cap casualty. If you were to release both of those guys, Wyatt Milam, who's your third-round pick out of West Virginia last year, the left tackle for the Mountaineers last year, I think he slides into right guard pretty easily. And then Jonah Monheim was basically the only rookie center that played all year. So he was put on a lot of all-rookie teams and stuff like that, but there was pretty much an asterisk every single time where it's like Monheim did not play well, but he's the only center, you know, in the field. So we gotta throw him on the squad. I think if, you know, at the very least you bring in Garrett Bradbury and move back a couple picks. I'm not even sure it would take as much as a fifth and a fourth swap, but, you know, you bring in Garrett Bradbury, you potentially have a starting center for slightly cheaper than Hainsey, who's maybe even a little bit above Hainsey in terms of ability. And if Jonah Monheim has some ridiculous camp and you're like, wow, he's our starting center, he beat up Garrett Bradbury, you cut Garrett Bradbury or you make him your backup for a year and then let him walk in free agency the next year and you start Monheim. So I think that gives you at least a little bit of insurance across an offensive line that, you know, obviously you paid Trevor Lawrence in the last 24 months. I think you're going to want to, you know, ensure that he's in a good spot in terms of protection. The second trade, I titled it Making Room for A.J. Brown kind of with a, you know, a little wink there. I don't really believe the Patriots are going to acquire A.J. Brown. I'd be super disappointed if A.J. Brown is acquired by another squad and the Patriots, you know, weren't able to get it done. I just kind of feel like, you know, there's a real reality where A.J. Brown just isn't moved. The reports that the Patriots called about him and that the Eagles' asking price was not serious was, I think, the exact wording. That, to me, probably means it included a first-rounder at minimum, maybe two first-rounders. I'd be super, super frustrated from a fan's perspective if their quote-unquote unserious asking price was, like, a first-round pick and, you know, Anfernee Jennings, right? If it was just, like, we're not dealing a first-round pick from, I'd be super, super annoyed. Now, if it's two firsts and a third, you know, I would have a little bit more room to say, hey, you know what, I understand why you didn't make that trade. I still think that you need to maximize the weapons for Drake May, and I think that in part means adding a top receiver along with Stephon Diggs. You know, we'll obviously see what his legal case ends up being. We'll have to see what Christian Barmore's legal case ends up being, but, you know, whether the contracts are voided or depending on the stipulations in there, they're cut, something like that. You could potentially see a major boost in cap space, you know, if Barmore or Diggs were to, you know, have more serious repercussions there. And if that's the case, then there really shouldn't be any excuse to try to acquire A.J. Brown, especially if Diggs were to not be with the team next year. But with all that being said, I said it was trading Pop Douglas and pick 208 for a 2027 fifth rounder. And I had them being dealt to him being dealt to the Panthers. The reason I chose Pop Douglas, right, is he's in a contract year. And I think it's becoming increasingly more obvious that finding these 400 to 600 yard sort of gadgety guys at slot receiver who are these quick twitch guys who, you know, once in a while they might have a 90 yard game, 100 yard game, but for the most part they're going to be in that, you know, 25 to 40 yards a game range, maybe another 10 yards on the on the ground off an end around. And I don't think those guys have a ton of value, especially when you've got a guy like Marcus Jones back there returning punts. And I think they're so easy to find that if you have the opportunity to, A, clear up a roster spot, but then, B, also move up around and move one of your 4 6-round picks into the future and get a more premium pick in 2027 where you have less picks than you do now, I think that would make a lot of sense. And I think that probably is Douglas's value in a trade. But I also kind of feel that, you know, if you're I don't think you're trading Douglas without the intention of adding a really superior receiver, right? I don't think you're going to trade Douglas, then turn around and sign Jalen Naylor, for example. I don't think that makes much sense. At that point, I'd rather Douglas just play out his contract. But, you know, I think that's the sort of trade that could make a lot of sense. And I think if you're Carolina, you know, you want to make sure you obviously picked up Bryce Young's fifth-year option. You want to make sure that he's your guy, right? Jimmy Horn had that bad drop at the end of the wild card against the Rams. He's kind of in the same ilk as Pop Douglas, as sort of that smaller gadget guy. And one trade I almost actually put in here would have been like Pop Douglas in a sixth or Pop Douglas in a seventh for a sixth and Tez Walker from Baltimore because of the UNC connection between him and Drake May. That was one I actually considered, but I'd already written up the Carolina one, so I opted to stick with it. But that could be another thing. That was kind of a little sidebar there, but I think the Panthers, in theory, you've got Jalen Coker, who's a bigger target on the outside. You'll see if you can get anything out of Leggett. You know, maybe, maybe not. Tet McMillan's a bigger target on the outside. You put Pop Douglas in the slot, maybe he offers you, you know, a little bit more than what, you know, Hunter Renfrow and Adam Thielen were able to offer. But regardless, I think you, you know, have to look at the squad and think, you know, you can do better if you're Carolina than, you know, Jimmy Horn probably. If you're the Patriots, you know, you're hoping that you can do better than Pop Douglas, because I think you've got a lot of guys that are kind of at that Pop Douglas level. I think you could even argue that Efton Chisholm, if given the same snaps as Pop Douglas, would probably do the same thing. So, you know, you move up around, you know, see what you can do, you know, as far as a Pop Douglas trade. And then the third one, I titled it Turning the Page from the Belichick Era. One of the few guys still left who was a major player from that Belichick era is Jelani Tavai. And this is about as minimal a trade as you can get. But there is some logic here, right? So I have Jelani Tavai and pick 190 in the sixth round going to the Giants for pick 185 in the sixth round. So the Patriots are literally moving up five slots in the sixth round. So essentially this just acts as a way for the Giants to move to, you know, first place in the waiver order sort of thing. I actually don't think Jelani Tavai would go on waivers. I think he would just be cut outright. But Micah McFadden for the Giants, but pending free agent. You've got Bobby Okereke, who they've already announced they plan to release. If you can move back five slots in the fifth round and pick up Jelani Tavai, if you're the Giants, you know, he's 2024, he was a career best, 115 tackles. The Patriots, I just think, are looking for a different style of linebacker. So I think that might make sense. Now, I think the first thing people will be thinking is, if instead of shopping Tavai to move up five picks in the sixth round, like, just cut him at that point. And I would, at first, on the surface, I'd agree, right? He holds a $5.2 million cap hit, which is way too high for what the Patriots are going to be looking for. I think there's an off chance that he, you know, takes some sort of restructure to stick with the team. If he were to bump down to $3 million, I'd feel a lot more comfortable keeping him around as sort of a depth piece, leadership guy, special teamer. But if they were to cut him outright, they'd save just over $1.7 million, so $3.5 million would be left as dead cap. If you were to get traded, they would save $2.3 million, taking on $2.9 million as dead cap. So even though that $600,000 isn't a ton, if you had the opportunity, instead of just getting rid of Tavai, if they said, hey, you can get rid of Tavai, but you can also move up five draft picks in the sixth round and you get $600,000, I don't think anyone's going to say no to that. I think you probably want some veteran stability at the second level if you're the Giants, and I think Tavai could potentially offer that. I did kind of think about doing some thing with, you know, a swap with Tavai and Deontay Banks, but I opted to not get too weird there and just kind of keep it very straightforward in that sense. The only other guy, the guy that is actually probably a bigger trade candidate than any three of these, I didn't put on the list more than anything because I feel like I've seen a lot of trade stuff with him, and I've also included him in a couple trade sort of packages or trade rumor articles. And I'm actually, when I do a mock draft here in a little bit, I'll have a segment where, or I'll have a piece to the mock draft where he is traded as part of the draft. That was something I was thinking about doing earlier. But, you know, I think if you're, you know, looking to, you know, spice things up, you're not going to include Anfernee Jennings, you know, just from a writer's perspective. I also think it's not impossible he just stays with the team. He's another guy kind of similar to Garrett Bradbury, and this is kind of hypocritical for me to include Bradbury in the article when this is the same case as him. And this is the same case as is with Jennings. But I kind of feel that Jennings probably would have already been gone if he were to be one of those guys that the Patriots viewed as an outright cut candidate, as a guy who was just too expensive. Now, I do think there's a reality where the Patriots, for example, trade for Grenard and Jennings goes the other direction, or they sign Trey Hendrickson and they cut Jennings that same day to you know, offset some of that money. But I just, you know, over the cap listed them as, I think they're seventh highest, or I don't remember if it was sixth, seventh, or eighth, but a very likely cut candidate, all things considered, based on their formula. And I just, I kind of find it hard to believe that they'd be so quick to get rid of a guy on the edge, even though he isn't like a great pass rusher. I don't think that's his role. It's, his role is to set the edge as a run stopper. And I think when, you know, it really came down to it, and they needed to rely on guys other than Harold Landry for the playoffs, with him being out, you know, I do think that a guy like, you know, Anfernee Jennings has a lot of value. So I think that is, you know, a potential a potential move that would make a lot of sense. But I probably, yeah, I think the move to keep him would make more sense than a move to cut him. Yeah, I mean, the Patriots are apparently monitoring Tyreek Hill's situation. I'd be a fan, honestly. I think that, you know, obviously that isn't – the thing that would annoy me is if they signed Tyreek Hill and then they said, all right, we signed Tyreek, but we're not – then A.J. Brown gets dealt for a second-round pick and we say, no, it's fine, right? Like, you need to get the star, right? A.J. Brown is a star. Tyreek Hill had a mediocre season in 2024 before, you know, missing most of 2025 with – that pretty gruesome leg injury. I mean, he's going to turn 33 in March. Or he just turned 32, rather. I was going to say he's going to turn 33 in March, but his birthday was actually 2 days ago. So, I mean, he's going to be a 32-year-old receiver. I mean, you look at his stats. He only played 4 games this year. What was he on pace for? 265 divided by 4. It's actually 66 yards a game, which would put him over 1,000. What exactly would that put him at? 1,126. So it would be a little bit of a bounce back after having just 959 yards in 2024. And the previous two seasons, over 1,700, almost hit 1,800 in 2023, yards short. Both 119 catch seasons. I don't think anyone doubts that he had a spectacular career. I question a little bit if he can reach the heights that he reached with the Chiefs and with his first 2 years in Miami again. You know, he's played 21 games over the last 2 years. He had 81 catches in 2024 despite playing every game. So he's dipped a little bit. His production has definitely dipped, and you got to hope that speed doesn't dip with him for any team that's, you know, going to look to go sign him. He took 24 carries. In 2016, wow, for 267 yards, impressive stats as a rusher. But you know, I kind of feel like it's the sort of guy that you would like to add, and I wouldn't dislike adding him at all. I would dislike adding him as a, you know, as an alternative to, you know, bringing in a guy like A.J. Brown. But if A.J. Brown isn't on the table and he doesn't get dealt and they bring in Tyreek Hill, like, I'm not going to argue with that. I'm going to say, hey, A.J. Brown clearly wasn't available. But, yeah, I think, you know, A.J. Brown – or Tyreek Hill and Stephon Diggs together makes you a very old duo on the outside of receiver. It would mean that Tyreek Hill would be 32. Diggs is going to turn 33 during the middle of the season. But those are two receivers on the wrong side of 30. But this Tyreek Hill, stylistically, could be the sort of guy that you say, hey, Pop Douglas, we're going to trade you to, you know, Carolina. We're going to sign Tyreek Hill. You're going to play the slot instead, because Douglas is on a prove-it deal anyway, or is in a contract year, rather, and then we're going to sign Tyreek Hill to that one-year prove-it deal. Even though there hasn't been any contact between the two parties, that's what's been reported anyway, between Tyreek Hill and the Chiefs. That to me just seems like such an obvious, you know, path for him to take. You got to look at it. You say the Chiefs need receiver help. Tyreek Hill is getting towards the end of his career. I'm sure he wants to go play with Pat Mahomes again, you know, to wrap up his career, see if he can win one more Super Bowl. Maybe he made his money. He proved that he isn't some function of Patrick Mahomes, and he's just a really, really good wide receiver.
you know, that's the sort of guy I think that you, you know, in theory look at and say, this is one of the best receivers in the league. This was one of the best receivers in the league for the past couple of years before his injury and before 2024. He was phenomenal in Kansas City, and somehow was even better in Miami. So, you know, that's the sort of guy I think you look at and say, hey, what can we do with him if we're Kansas City? But for New England, like I said, you know, I'd like it. I wouldn't like it as an alternative to A.J. Brown. If A.J. Brown isn't available, you want to go after Tyreek Hill. You want to go after, you know, these other veteran wideouts. I don't mind it as much. I think Tyreek Hill is an all-time, you know, great at receiver. He's really, really good. But, yeah, that's kind of my feeling in that sense. I think as far as personality goes, you already are dealing with Diggs. So I don't think that, you know, seeing Tyreek Hill join the team would feel like anything new for Mike Vrabel. I think she's employed his fair share of sort of diva receivers, even though Tyreek Hill's, his issues are a little bit deeper than being a diva. I think that's the sort of talent that you could add, you know, regardless of off-field stuff. So interesting signing potentially. For New England. But I kind of also, we were talking about him before, Jonathan Grenard, I kind of put him in the same category where, you know, you've got a talented player, but they're not the best at their position that the market has to offer. You know, to me, if you're going to, in the event the Vikings are like, hey, we want a really premium pick for Jonathan Grenard, you know, we were looking at what he did in a non-injured season back in 2024 and before we signed him with Houston. And we want, you know, your second-round pick. At that point, I'd say call up Philadelphia and say, hey, what exactly is it going to take to get A.J. Brown? Like, if it's going to take a second-round pick, we'd rather just give you our second-rounder. And that should kind of go without saying. The other news, Dallas Goedert obviously isn't returning to the Eagles. That was announced. Potential signing for New England, I think that has some legitimacy. I think that, you know, that's a guy that could potentially thrive as a second tight end with Hunter Henry. Obviously, really productive player, productive red zone threat, too. I think there'll be plenty of teams calling and looking to try to make him a fairly highly paid tight end, potentially another sort of Zach Ertz. In the respect that, you know, Ertz obviously left Philly, goes to Arizona briefly, and then goes to the Commanders and is a productive player there with a young QB. Potentially they say, hey, Goddard, if you can be a productive red zone weapon for us and be a good player for us in that respect with a young quarterback, you know, maybe, you know, I would say Vegas, but I think Vegas has a couple tight ends there already. You know, potentially that's a team you look at and you say, hey, what can we do with, you know, maybe the Giants even. What can we do with Dallas Goedert? Rashid Shaheed is getting some ties to the Bills. That would make a ton of sense to me, actually. I don't think he's, you know, a legit number one. But if the Bills say, hey, we're going to attack our receiver problem head on, and we're going to say, hey, Rashid Shaheed, we're going to give you a deal in free agency, especially if Alec Pierce isn't available. And then we're also going to draft a receiver in the first round. You know, I think that could be a really interesting, you know, method for them to go about fixing their receiver room. You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think I look at the group of I think you just look at the group of players available. I was just looking at, I'm scrolling on an Instagram account right now. Harold Perkins, one of my favorite potential additions. He hasn't played a football game in 19 months with injuries, but he said that he won't be a Saints fan if they don't come get him. I'd love him in New England. I think that would make a ton of sense. Random tidbit there. But, you know, in general, I think there's a potential, you know, addition there if you're Dallas Goedert potentially trying to come in. The Patriots are able to pay him. Isaiah Likely,
who was another guy I mentioned as a potential Patriots addition in that Daily Campus article I was mentioning earlier. You know, there's a couple guys there that you could potentially add. See what the deal is with, you know, trying to improve this offense and trying to make another run in 2026. But I think you also got to be careful. You don't want to add all these, you know, kind of washed players where you're like, all right, we got Tyreek Hill, we got Dallas Goedert, we've got, you know, we're adding Joel Bitonio to play guard. Like, I think that's those are some nice short-term fixes. But ideally, you know, maybe you had Joel Bitonio for a year, you had Dallas Goedert for a year or two to play that second tight end role. But then instead of adding Tyreek Hill, you say, hey, can we find, you know, as an upper echelon guy in A.J. Brown? Or if we do sign Tyreek Hill, can we use one of those top picks to go find a receiver in the second round? You know, and continue to build towards the future. Because, you know, you're going to have Drake May for the next decade plus. Ideally, you have a guy that can build with him long term. And Kyle Williams, I like him a lot. I think Efton Chisholm has the potential to be a good player. You know, not to say that they won't be contributors, but neither of them have shown to me yet anyway that they're the style of player that's going to be a high-volume receiving threat for, like, a Super Bowl-caliber team. I think Chisholm is your fourth guy and Kyle Williams is your deep threat. You know, there's potential there. But, you know, if you could add a really transcendent playmaker, you know, even through the draft, if you believe that's Casey Concepcion or Chris Bell out of Louisville or any of these guys, that would be huge. And that's the sort of guy that you could potentially have with Drake May for the foreseeable future. All over the place with the coughing, and this happened last time too. Hopefully it'll go away soon. But yeah, I think it's right about time to do a mock draft. That's what I've heard. So yeah, we'll do one of those. Like I said, I want to include a trade that involves a player in this one. So seven rounds as always. We'll turn down the speed for now. And we're going to probably make the trade beforehand. So Anfernee Jennings, I think dealing him is a real possibility. You know, and he wasn't a guy that I included in the article. So for the sake of, even though I don't want him to get traded and I think he's a solid player, for the sake of him not being in the article, we'll trade him. And I looking at the sort of place he could go, you know, I think the Commanders are a potential team. I think they kind of admire those sort of Belichickian players a little bit, right? They brought in Jonathan Jones and Dietrich Wise last year. I think they like having veteran pieces in there. And they only have five picks in this draft, according to the PFF sim. But if we could get, like, if we could basically do the same thing as the Pop Douglas trade, where we send pick 208 and Anfernee Jennings, or maybe we send... Yeah, we'll send 208. Can we even send 208? Yeah. Send 208, which was acquired from the Keon White trade to San Francisco and Anfernee Jennings to the Commanders for a fifth-round pick. We'll send that over. That'll get accepted. So the logic, kind of similar to the Pop Douglas trade, is you're getting rid of one of your sixth-round picks, which you're not going to be able to use four sixth-round picks and have all four guys make the team. That just isn't likely. You... in theory, offload a contract in Anfernee Jennings, even though I don't really see trading him as offloading a contract, but this is a little bit Vrabel-esque in that respect. Maybe you sign Trey... you know what? We'll do that. We'll say that the Patriots sign Trey Hendrickson. That's what we'll do. The Patriots sign Trey Hendrickson in this world, you know, and then trade Anfernee Jennings to the Commanders afterward, move up around in a future draft. So we're minus, say, a pick in this one. But we're up Trey Hendrickson. So that'll be the storyline we go with in this one. That's one thing that I'd kind of like to do. I kind of wish I had done a little bit more, with some more interesting trades, and whatnot. But here we are at 31. We have a couple interesting options. Obviously we have Trey Hendrickson on the edge now. That was our marquee free agent signing. We've got, you know, we've ridded ourselves of the terrible Anfernee Jennings, you know, because he can't rush the passer, but so good in run force. You know, I think the first place I'm kind of thinking they could go would be offensive line. Casey Concepcion is here.
I think it would have made a little bit more sense to grab him if we had taken or if we had traded Pop Douglas instead. But we did opt for the Anfernee Jennings storyline instead. So we'll forego taking a receiver in the first round for now. Actually, will we? Omar Cooper's here too. He's more of an outside. He can play on the outside a little bit more, a little bigger. You know, we were talking about this before. If the Patriots were to add a Tyreek Hill, or if they, for all I care, they don't add Tyreek Hill. If you can get a guy who long-term can be a fit with Drake May and be a guy that Drake May can work with, I think that has a ton of value. So adding a receiver, I know Concepcion, there's stuff about his hands that people don't like. A 10% drop rate is quite high. 4.2% for Cooper, though, 4% for Chris Bell. Jeremy Bernard, only 1.5%. That's another guy that I think if the Patriots were a little bit more established at receiver, he could have a ton of value. I think he's probably a consistent, like, 800-yard guy is kind of his floor. I don't know if his ceiling is much higher, but he's one of those guys that I think I've heard a lot of good things about. Zachariah Branch, spectacular athlete. Malachi Fields, obviously a big body. This is tough. I think we're going to take Omar Cooper. He ran pretty well at the combine, too. Ran a 4.42. Not like that is really a reason to take a guy this early. But I do kind of like the idea of if you say, hey, we have Trey Hendrickson now on the defensive side of the ball. Our defense is pretty much complete aside from, you know, just adding depth throughout. If you can add a top wide out, I think that does you a lot of good. So we'll add Omar Cooper here at 31. I don't think we're going to do any trade-ups, really. Are we? We traded up last time. We're going to try to make another trade-up. Concepcion went. Caleb Lomu. Proctor. AJ Halsey went. Dylan Thedman goes at 13 in this mock. Arvell Reese at 12. Sonny Styles up there at 7. Yeah, we're probably just throwing this cough. Turbo for the rest of this. Second round, did Golde already go? That was kind of a guy I wanted to take. Looks like he did. Yeah, Jake Golde goes at 49 to the Vikings. That would have been a guy I kind of would have been interested in trading up for. But Josiah Trotter here at 63 is kind of interesting. Looking at the overall big board, Trotter is number 2 among players available. Grayson Halton tested really well at the combine. A lot of these guys seem more like slot corners to me more than anything. I think Danny Dennis Sutton from Penn State could be a really interesting addition. I know we added Hendrickson, but maybe you say, hey, did we maybe add Joel Bitonio across the offensive line? Or did the Patriots feel good about Garrett Bradbury and the development of the left side and Will Campbell and Jared Wilson? You know, maybe that's a possibility. This is tough. I think I might try to switch things up here a little bit and go for a little bit of a curveball pick here. And Danny Dennis Sutton would be interesting. He had 8 sacks this year. This is really difficult because I'm between 2 guys right now. And we'll kind of go through the logic here. I'm between Dominique Orange, the nose tackle from Iowa State, and Danny Dennis Sutton from Penn State. And the reason I'm interested in Dominique Orange is, number 1, because the Patriots can develop defensive interior players in the defensive interior like no one's business, it seems. You know, guys like Corey Durden, Kyrus Tonga this year, even Eric Gregory is a UDFA. You know, we're able to put together some pretty solid runs. Now, the concern here is Kyrus Tonga's market seems like it might be a little bit more robust than originally thought. Apparently, the Patriots tried to come to an agreement with him at the beginning or before their playoff run. I don't remember exactly which was reported, but I've seen valuations as high as like $7.5 million, which I would not pay for Tonga. I like him a lot, and I think he's a fun two-way player as a fullback too, but I don't think that he's worth $7.5 million. Dante Corleone here is also a really big player, but 335. But
you know, potentially you just say, hey, we're going to continue to invest in the defensive line. We're going to replace Tong in the short term. We're not really sure what the off-field stuff is looking like with Christian Barmore. Is he potentially – is 2026 his last year with the team maybe? You know, that won't be the case with Milton Williams, hopefully. But do you look at Dominique Orange and say, hey, this is a guy who can, you know, really is one of the better run stoppers in college football and one of the bigger bodies in college football? And I'm kind of talking myself into that. And the other guys would be Danny Dennis Sutton and, to a lesser degree, Romello Height. His age is kind of scaring me off a little bit, being almost 25. But Danny Dennis Sutton, really, really good edge defender for them. But I think we are going to go with Big Citrus, Dominique Orange. Real nickname. I didn't just make that up. But, yeah, it's a little bit interesting to go with nose tackle in the second round, but I think if the Patriots truly have that belief in, like, a nose tackle being a key part of what they want to do, he could be really, really good value. And it seems in general that nose tackle doesn't have a ton of value in today's NFL. You look at a guy like Lee Hunter, right? I think some people have said he's, you know, a top 20 talent. Daniel Jeremiah, I think, had him really high in his mock. I think he had him as high as 22. And this mock, not going until 38. So if the Patriots are sitting there at the end of the first round even, and they say, hey, we think Lee Hunter's a really, really talented player. We think, you know, Caleb Banks, who is going at 15 in this mock and, you know, only played 3 games this year, definitely a better pass rusher than Hunter. But if they really believe he's one of these guys that's, you know, some really, really legit nose tackle that they could, you know, could help transcend their defense and, you know, do them a lot of good on the defensive front, I don't have a problem with them taking him. But we'll take Orange here in the second round. And in the third round, this is like a pretty obvious pick to me. I think the Patriots need safety help regardless of the future of Jalen Hawkins. So we're going to take Zaki Wheatley from Penn State here. Very good athlete. Talented player, moved around a lot this year, played deep, played in the box. 2024 played a lot more as a deep safety than in the box, but, you know, missed tackle rate, 11.5%, not bad for a safety. He's a little bit older at 24, but, you know, Craig Woodson, I think, was also a little bit older. So maybe you just say him and Woodson, you know, albeit you're a little bit older at the safety position, but we like what you bring as far as your athleticism, as far as your versatility, and that's going to be our safety combo of the future. If you are to bring in Trey Hendrickson on that edge, then I think you look at, you know, a guy like Jalen Hawkins and you say, hey, can we cut costs by just kind of letting you walk and then drafting your replacement in the third round in Zaki Wheatley? So, you know, obviously you don't know that you're going to get Trey Hendrickson until after you know about Jalen Hawkins potentially being re-signed, but Zaki Wheatley is one of those guys that is potentially a guy that, you know, the Patriots look at. I'm thinking about it now because I don't want to go for too much longer, but I think I probably will have a separate episode later this week. I might record it on Friday as well, of re-sign or let walk for the Patriots. Just have like a specific section for New England. I think that could be interesting. 125 for New England here in the fourth round. So we've taken a receiver, Omar Cooper. We added to the defensive line, taking Dominique Orange as our new nose tackle to replace Tonga. And then add to that defensive backfield, and Zaki Wheatley. So we've done a good job so far, I think. I kind of want to take, like, some combine star. trying to think. Who was the defensive tackle from Zane Durant? This would be a little bit early compared to PFF's metrics for him, but he could be kind of interesting. I'd be adding another Penn State guy and another defensive lineman. I almost took Danny Dennis Sutton. That would have been 3 Penn State guys in a row. We'll forgo that for now. What we're going to do is, you know, we haven't added to the offensive line yet. We also haven't added to the running back situation yet. Ooh, okay. I've seen a little bit about Le'Veon Moss. I'm not sure what his injury was. Efficient player this year, though, 5.2 yards per carry on the ground, 6.3 of the year before.
Not a lot of miles on his body, which I do like. So I honestly, I can't say I know a ton about him, but he's got the name, Le'Veon. You know, Le'Veon Bell. Can't really go wrong with the player named Le'Veon in the backfield. Decent size, 5'11", 210. Dealt with some injury this year. I wish I could tell you guys off the top of my head, but I'm not an expert in that sense. We'll take Le'Veon Moss. I think the idea of just adding a running back in the mid rounds like that seems really smart to me. Dean Connors was a guy that I talked about last time. Wrote an article about him. Mike Washington, another guy who was a combine standout. That could be maybe another guy. It's a guy I've written about. Really, really good power with his size and also excellent speed at 4.33. I think there's something there. And this is where people might kind of call me crazy a little bit, but I am a fan of an idea like this. And in all honesty, this probably is a little bit high. Actually, you know what? Should I do this? So the Patriots did a nice job with Joe Milton and his development. They probably didn't get as much back for him as you would like, ideally. However, I think the idea behind bringing in a guy like Joe Milton, developing him behind the scenes and potentially trading him for a future pick or developing him into being the long-term backup is smart. So this is going to probably be a little bit controversial, me making this pick, but I'm actually going to take two options here. They're listed right next to each other. I'm debating between the Drew Aller or Cade Klubnik, and I think I'm going to take Drew Aller. And the reason is you need good backup QB play when you need it. Otherwise, you don't notice the backup QB. Obviously, he's not on the field. But in the event you need a good backup quarterback, you know, you need a good backup QB when they're called upon. And I think Josh Dobbs is that. I also think Josh Dobbs is slated to make almost $5 million this year. And I don't think that maybe you don't necessarily want to pay that. I wrote an article about potential alternatives to Josh Dobbs. But more than anything, do you just say, Drew Aller, you're going to be our emergency third guy for the entire year? We haven't seen anything about, you know, Tommy DeVito being, re-signed or anything like that yet. Obviously, he's a restricted free agent, so other teams will have the opportunity to take a look at him if he isn't re-signed. But, Drew Aller, maybe you add him as a third guy, and then after 2026, when Dobbs is a free agent, he steps in and becomes that backup QB. So I don't think that's impossible by any means. Here into the fifth round, pick 169. This is where I'm kind of tempted to take a combine standout, take a workout warrior. Let's take a look at corner. I think that's a position that New England is also, it's kind of a sneaky need. Takario Davis I had in an earlier mock draft, as part of a mock offseason. I had him in the fourth round. But we'll grab Damani Jackson. He ran pretty much as expected at the combine. I had him in an earlier mock. I don't know what his role is going to be in the NFL. It might just be that of a quality gunner special team. He ran the 4.4s. Add him in the fifth round. I believe I had him in a mock draft at one point on Fansided. Damani Jackson, Graham Wilker. Let's take a look here. I may or may not have. It's taking a little bit to load, but it doesn't come up right away, so maybe I didn't. I'm not totally sure. But Damani Jackson, roll the dice on a guy like him, see if you can get anything out of a depth corner there. Obviously, only 3 6-round picks in this mock draft because we added sent away Anthony Jennings with one of them to move up around next year. I think 6th round here, this is where you potentially look QB. And Taylen Green had a heck of a combine. I don't know if he's going to be a quarterback in the NFL. He's 6'6", 235. He's almost 24 years old. He is really fast. He ran a 4.37, and I'm going to take him here. Now, is he playing receiver? Is he playing tight end? I don't know. Maybe you just kind of list him as an athlete. And I know by actual writing, I've taken 2 quarterbacks in this draft in the first 6 rounds. But if you look at it, you say Taylen Green,
you're going to be a developmental tight end for us potentially, you know, behind Hunter Henry and behind, you know, maybe a free agent signing. We talked about Dallas Goedert earlier. You know, could you be a weapon for us at tight end? And then Drew Aller eventually be our long-term backup. That could be, you know, an interesting way of looking at things. Here later on now, another sixth-round pick. We're past the 200 mark. So we've added a QB. We've added a super athlete in Talen Green, who potentially could play tight end for us. We've got Damani Jackson as a corner. Le'Veon Moss, who I mentioned I didn't know much about, but I've heard his name a lot. Add him to the backfield. So we added a couple defensive backs, a running back, tight end with an asterisk, and Talen Green. Drew Aller as a QB, and then a receiver and Dominique Orange as our nose tackle. I'm kind of inclined to add a tight end here. Actually, no. Well, we just took Talen Green as our developmental guy. Let's go offensive line here. What does the IOL have for us? Joshua Braun, big body out of Kentucky. I wrote about him as a potential fit for Vrabel right around this range. I said I think four to six as a potential area to target him. You know, adding to that interior offensive line, I think is something that's definitely a positive and something they could look to do. And I'd like to add a linebacker here. I think that could be a nice depth addition here at pick 211. Who are we going to add? There's a couple interesting options. Nnamdi Obiazor ran really well at the combine. And he does kind of fit that profile as a smaller linebacker. Bryce Bodiger, I've given to the Patriots a couple times, I feel like. So we'll give him Bryce Bodiger. I don't know if he'll actually be here in the sixth round. He seems like a guy with the potential to go a little bit higher. That would be one of the better picks of this draft to me. And this isn't necessarily reflective of what I would do, because if it is reflective of what I do, I'd probably run the exact same draft a bunch of times in a row. I'm just trying to give, you know, you guys a little bit of an idea for some different options New England might have. As we get to 247 here, we technically haven't added an edge rusher yet, so we'll add an edge rusher. Logan Fano is the brother of Spencer Fano. 5 sacks this year, 6'5", 260, good size, 15.6% pass rush run rate. We'll take him. I don't have a problem with that at all. So just to review before we get out of here. We get a C for overall draft grade. We made that first trade, Anfernee Jennings, and a sixth-round pick out of here for a fifth-rounder, pick 208 being sent to Washington. Then we bring in Trey Hendrickson in free agency was sort of the caveat we put on with this. And then we draft Omar Cooper in round one to, you know, help add to the receiver room. Dominique Orange replaces Kyrus Tonga if his market gets a little too hectic just adds general depth with the potential departure of Christian Barmore in the next 12 months, especially pending that legal situation and his play in this upcoming year. Zaki Wheatley solidifies the back end for us. We'll see whether that's as a backup or whether it's just a one-for-one replacement to Jalen Hawkins. Le'Veon Moss adding some depth in the backfield. Drew Aller, a little bit of a surprising pick there at 131 in the fourth round, but potential long-term backup for us there. Damani Jackson, decent speed, special teams guy. Add him to the mix of guys like Marcellus Dial, Alex Austin, who's a restricted free agent, but I do kind of expect him to come back, as guys who could potentially claim that fourth corner spot as well. Talen Green drafted, the quarterback from Arkansas, Combine Warrior, Workout Warrior, kind of with the idea of him converting to either receiver or tight end, specifically tight end, potentially being a developmental guy behind Hunter Henry. And we talked about Dallas Goedert earlier as a potential addition there. I think Talen Green could be really interesting. Joshua Braun in round six, the first offensive lineman we take isn't until the sixth round, but, you know, adding a big body there, a guy I had written about in previous mock drafts,
or in previous articles that kind of give players that could fit, potential players the Patriots could draft that would fit sort of what they might be looking for at each position. And he was my guard prospect, my interior offensive line prospect. Bryce Bodiger in round six, the Oregon Duck, really good season for them. Thumper, but also a little bit lighter. He can move around, has a little bit more athleticism than, you know, a Jelani Tavai, who we mentioned earlier I had written about as a potential trade candidate. And then Logan Fano, brother of Spencer Fano, would be a first-round pick there in the seventh round. You know, would be interesting to, you know, potentially see them add an edge after we opted to forego drafting Danny Dennis Sutton out of Penn State in that second round for Dominique Orange instead. But that'll be all for now. I'm planning on doing another episode, like I mentioned, where I focus specifically on the free agents, specifically the six unrestricted free agents. It'll be a shorter episode, probably only, you know, 25 minutes. But I wanted to get that out as a specific standalone episode prior to free agency. You know, and there might be more news. You never know before, you know, that I can mention before we get into next week's episode. So this has been fun. This is Graham Sox Pats, and we'll see you guys in the next one.